If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Dave Hasty. Josh, are you there? Hi, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm George Ashwell. And we are Before the Lights.
Before the Lights. Before the Lights.
We run a gym in central London where we train actors for film roles. Everything from superhero workouts.
Is trying to work out with Hugh Jackman just ridiculously intimidating?
Yeah. I was like, oh, I lifted a 160 deadlift or something the other day. And he was like, oh, mate, that's really good. Well done. Wait, are you talking pounds or kilograms?
To keeping people ticking over mentally and physically between jobs.
When I'm working as an actor, you're like, oh my gosh, I never knew that life could be this amazing. When you're not working, that can then feel like... I remember all of those older actors who were very sad whenever they weren't working. And I'm like, now I get it.
Our day-to-day is in the gym, but this is absolutely not a podcast about how to work out or get ripped. You might get the odd tip every now and again, because that is how we earn our living. But the main reason we're here is just to chat to our clients about their careers and their relationship with fitness.
This is where I start to sound kind of like one of those actors who's going to talk about his process. Like, you got to look after your instrument, man.
Expect everything that goes on behind the scenes, when they're on sets, on stage, or embarrassing themselves during a workout.
It's me running, and you just see, like, my hand. I keep on going. So you just see me kind of,
you,
like, limping out of shot.
I was first up for the relay team, and I didn't have any spikes. We set off face planted on the tarmac, and I just heard Scott Dawson, who I fancied so much, go,
shout out, Scott.
Liv, your ass is munching on your shorts, like that.
You're listening to the Before the Lights podcast.
So this week we've got Julie Harkin on the episode. You may or may not know Julie. She is a award-winning casting director. And basically we delve into sort of behind the screen and talk about how sort of her influence on the industry is pretty interesting, how she's kind of a bit of a pioneer for sort of colorblind casting and how she views the industry on that kind of ilk.
What we do, and we're getting someone ready for a role and even getting people ready for auditions sometimes, and she is the person that gets to see them and makes her mind up on whether or not they're the right fit for a job, which is something I'd never really considered before. So I think this is a really great episode from a whole new perspective. I'll introduce Julie first.
That would be helpful.
Yeah. You just
chirping. Everybody like, who the fuck is Julie Harkin? I haven't seen her in anything.
You are our first.
Isn't a famous actor meant to be on this podcast?
You are our first ever non-acting guest.
I mean, I feel very privileged.
I mean, we
very
had to
privileged,
have you on.
Very special to be here, to be asked.
Well, without you, the actors wouldn't have a job. So,
well, exactly.
You're more important than them.
let's just remind them all of that.
When
they come in the gym.
That's what this is. It's an experiment, and we're just going to use it as a way of putting them all back in their place.
Just say you all owe your entire lives and careers to Julie Harkin. 100%. Each and every one of you.
100%.
I mean, we are really appreciative. So.
You should be. A fucking busy woman.
Very busy woman.
That was another thing. I was like, fair play.
Probably the busiest person we've ever had on this podcast.
I know,
that's for sure.
So, you know.
All these actors just have so much time.
She's going to look at my script as well. I've written a script.
All right. What's your script about, David?
I don't want to talk about it on air.
All right. Okay.
So I'd like to welcome and introduce Julie Harkin, our guest for this week's episode.
Hi.
Award-winning casting director.
Yes.
And the reel includes Misfits, includes Industry, Utopia, I May Destroy You. It goes on and on and on. She's been involved in everything. And thank you very much for coming.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure.
It's always fascinated me, the role of a casting director.
Because, why?
Because it's like you genuinely deciding with a brief who the people are that we're going to watch on telly. And all you get is a script, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And a sort of idea of what they're looking for.
Yes.
And you go out and it's your choice.
Yes. I mean, it's not just my choice. It's like a collaboration. So we... Let me try and pick a show to use as an example. So when we did Misfits, it was a group of misfits. It was all young people doing community service for various crimes that they had committed. Everyone was like roughly between the ages of like 16 and 21. And we wanted to find fresh new faces. So me and my associate at the time, we spent... You know, Saturdays from 10 in the morning to 6 in the evening, every hour seeing maybe 60 kids
wow.
in group workshops, improvising, chatting to them, sort of walking around the room, getting to know people, and then pulling people out of that, and then bringing them into the next stage into the room and doing script work, and then bringing them into the next stage and doing chemistry reads with other actors, and then mixing and matching to try and find the group with the most chemistry. So this is like a casting process I'm describing pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've not been able to do anything like that in the past couple of years, but it's a very long, lengthy, detailed process to put together an ensemble of young people. I mean, an ensemble of older actors is, you know... not done in the same way,
yeah,
for obvious reasons, but it's very creative. It often can sometimes be extremely stressful and complicated, and you know, you do things for big streamers and studios, and you've got a lot of people to please and a lot of opinions. And I always say to folk, like, you know, if you were down in the bar with your friends, all of you wouldn't like the same actor.
No,
like five of you might be like, oh my God, they're fucking incredible. And there would be one asshole sat there going, oh my God, I can't stand them. That's my life.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so it's like trying to navigate through that without maybe swearing the way I just did, but like trying to explain your process to people, explain to people why someone's right for the role in the alchemy of the whole thing, and getting everyone on side. And
it's really, really interesting. Like, I don't think until I'd met you, I've never really considered like how much there is to it. Like, there's a hell of a lot to it, and it can make or break a show, I guess, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
If the actors aren't good, the show's not good.
Yeah.
Obviously, you need a great script and great director and great everything. You know, it's like a, you know, there's a lot of elements that need to be right for the thing to work. But it's a lot of pressure, therefore, to really push the thing forward.
Yeah.
And because you're on the phone to agents day in, day out, you're meeting people, and now you're also Zooming. Mm. So like your day is just nonstop talking to try and bring something together with the best available people in that moment to make it as successful as you possibly can. So I think it's about having the right energy and doing it in the most fair manner.
Yeah.
Because I think actors get treated quite badly in a lot of casting environments. And I've got like strict rules in place to make sure that that doesn't happen, because you've got to be a human being.
Yeah. When you get the brief for a job, are you aware of kind of the physical, I don't know what the word would be, like the constraints or the physical idea that they want someone to kind of portray? What we do and what you do, there is quite a big overlap in terms of if it's how someone looks or how they move, it's quite a big part of it. Is that something that you're made aware from the start or not?
Well, do you know a good example is, have you guys seen Pam and Tommy?
Yeah.
Like the transformation. I mean, Lily James is
an absolutely
stunningly beautiful woman who's always been incredibly slim and amazing. But like her transformation is insane to me. Yeah. You would get scripts and you'd read them and you would think of ideas and you would know that somebody may have to like adapt their physicality, their body shape, their weight, whatever, to suit the character.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had it in other ways where people have had to put on weight as much as they've had to lose weight. But generally, unless it's a reason like that example, I would get them to take out character descriptions and script where women are ever described by their weight.
Yep.
I'm always ringing up and going, I'm not sending a script out where a girl is described as thin, you know, any of that. And I do feel like as much as there is a huge requirement for people to be worked out and get into shape for certain roles. I think there's also a real need for body diversity on TV that doesn't exist.
Do you think that's happening, like there's a shift now, or is it something that still needs a lot of work?
I've never noticed the UK industry being overly toxic with it, to be perfectly honest. It's more a US problem, but I definitely feel like the more average looking, I mean, do you even fucking use the word average? What a terrible word. But like an average shape or an average look of a girl, like all of those young women graduating from drama schools, when I was 19, 20, never got agents, never got jobs, were discouraged. And I do think like when I think about where the industry's at now, and there certainly is so much more diversity in body shape and appearance. And I feel very positive and invigorated by that. And I certainly, you know, when we did I May Destroy You, Makayla Cole was in my face about that kind of stuff. She was like, we have got to represent women that look like women. Because like, you know, growing up in the 90s when I was a teenager, Kate Moss was saying things like nothing tastes as good as thin feels, and it was the heroin chic era, you know, everyone had like these hollow thighs and poker straight hair, and you know, and I was like this big busty girl from Ireland with this frizzy hair. I mean, the damage, the mental damage, like the world was at that time by promoting skinny. And I feel like you guys promote healthy.
Absolutely. I was thinking like we have spent a lot of time like literally, and still I guess it's like a trickle down of what you were saying, that we still deal with a lot of our time explaining to people that health and how you feel is so much more important than how you look, and that if you can get the how you feel and how your body works to be right, then the other stuff will happen. It's just so important not to make that the focal point.
Yeah, you don't want that to be
it's
your main goal.
It's the obsession over it. And you know, I've got younger women that work in my office, and I feel really inspired by a really different mindset that I can, you know, feel coming off them about how they feel about their bodies and how they feel about other their peers' bodies. When we were teenagers, everyone was having like diet competitions. Girls would come to school and not eat lunch because everyone was so desperately trying to look really emaciated. Like the thinner you were, the, you know, the more clout you had. So like to go back, you posted something on Instagram one day, David, about like saying it's about being healthy. Relating to the casting work, you know, when I start jobs, when I start casting, I am always encouraging that everyone has the same attitude about the females that we're casting, even the guys, because guys suffer from all this stuff as well, that we're never going to tell somebody that they need to lose weight for a part in terms of like looking good.
Yeah. If you've been told to lose weight, what is the reason in the script? What is the character trait that is the reason for telling us to lose weight? If not, we're not going to do it. If you're playing a heroin addict,
we
probably going to have to lose weight.
Yeah.
But we've had a notable shift in, or I've noticed a notable shift in the stuff that I'm being given. It's not like six pack super fit girls anymore. That's like, that's not the rhetoric. It's not like selling tickets because we need a nice poster. It's like, oh no, this person is a so-and-so, so therefore they have to look like this. Like I've got I've trained people that are playing refugees, people that are playing like Olympic swimmers, people that are playing hitmen and need to be like bulky and strong, but also have kind of lost their way and are alcoholics, so have to actually put on fat and have to look bloated. Like, we actually train for that as well. There's ways you can.
I didn't know that. Yeah,
we just go to the pub and have 10 pints.
But there's
perks of the job.
But there is like ways you can look like that type of person without doing it in an unhealthy way. The glossy magazines that you're talking about in the 90s.
Yeah.
It was people bowling out of clubs pissed.
Yeah.
It was super skinny people looking like they haven't eaten for ages, and those same people 30 years later, as in this, the equivalent person is now releasing like fitness apps and releasing like talking about their fitness regime in Women's Health magazine. And that is so, it's like cool to be healthy now, whereas it never used to be cool to be healthy.
It's all trends, isn't it? And now it's, I certainly notice it as well with like when we're casting young people, they don't drink like
we did. They don't smoke, they don't drink.
And I'm like, what are you up to at the weekend? It's like, oh, I'm going down the gym, or I'm going to make a poke bowl. And I'm like, you're not going out and get an absolute rat arsed? Because that's what I did my entire, you know, and I'm just like, isn't that so refreshing that it's not the done thing anymore to like fuck yourself up and smoke loads of fags, all that stuff. Like it's
not cool anymore.
No, it's not cool anymore. And rightly so. It never was cool.
Josh, what do you reckon people should do if they're a fan of this podcast?
I think they should like it, share it and subscribe to it.
Well done. That's great. Yeah, I like that.
Another thing that's like changed a lot, I think, is just the general diversity in casting. Like roles where you would think traditionally it would have just been a colour thing or a gender thing or whatever. Is that something that you feel sort of, I don't know if responsible is the right word, or is it more that the whole industry in general, like there isn't...
Oh God, I don't know if I could claim responsibility.
Not responsibility.
But No. But it was certainly diversity in terms of ethnicity is something that I mean, it's been my calling in life to change casting of actors of colour. Mm-hmm. You know, and it started with Misfits. It had not become something where it was a requirement back then, whereas now everybody is super sensitive for obvious reasons and everybody works really hard to make sure that there's some fairness and equality. I don't, you know, I'm not making myself out to be some sort of saviour of... increase in diversity in casting, but it was always something that was an issue for me that that the majority of the shows that I were watching were full of white people. Mm. I grew up in Northern Ireland and I wanted to be an actress when I was a kid and I never heard my accent on TV. I think the first time I saw anyone with a Northern Irish accent on TV was when it was the actor that played Jim in Coronation Street. And I remember saying to my dad, is that my accent? Because I didn't know, because you don't hear your own accent when you're a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I felt really frustrated as a teenager, like growing up in Derry, like, the Troubles was on and it was still rife at that time. I mean, and I was like, where are the opportunities for me? And why am I not represented? And it was always something in my head about not being represented. And then I went to drama school, came down to London to work in casting, and I was like, fucking hell. Like, imagine you're black or you're Asian. I feel underrepresented as an Irish person because of my accent. How do people from all these backgrounds feel? That they cannot see themselves. Mm. I felt so passionate about that from the moment I started working on my own. You know, like, I'll fight with people over it if I have to.
You still have to have those kind of conversations.
Yes, sometimes, unfortunately, yes. Uh-huh. Reluctantly and sadly so, yes. Mm-hmm. There's an older generation that still hasn't not caught up.
The idea that it's like it causes offence to someone.
Oh, don't.
It's insane, isn't it? It is mad. I imagine it was quite, not maybe demoralising or whatever, when you first started trying to broach that topic and were you just told... no, because that's the way it has to be. Or...
no, it wasn't that. I mean, like, nobody would ever, you know, even if they thought no, they wouldn't have the balls to say no. But it was more like, but that's not the character. Mm. It's like, what does it matter?
Yeah. Just who can do the best job and portraying
but
that
but now,
character.
You know, certainly now, our black actors, our Asian actors are certainly now reading scripts and saying, like, I feel like you've shoehorned my ethnicity into this character because you had a script written by a white person and it's all white story, it's all white background, and someone's gone, okay, so we'll meet that person, the black and Asian characters in the show with no thought to the backstory and no thought to, you know, sending it to a black actor and expecting them to make sense of it and understand how to play the role. Now there's so much work that needs done there.
I suppose that's also giving the leg up to writers from other backgrounds as well.
It's the whole industry,
until
George.
Until you get a writer from that background, you're never fully going to get a comprehensive script or comprehensive story of a person from that background as well. So
totally. It's the drama schools. Yeah. It's all the teachers at the drama schools. I haven't been in a drama school since pre-pandemic, so I hope I'm not speaking out of turn if there are changes have been made that I'm not aware of. But like, I've noticed, like, the staffing in drama schools are just predominantly white. Mm-hmm. The casting director community is predominantly white.
Yep.
You know, it's the work is needing to be done in all jobs in the industry for it to ever get to a fair place. So it's a way off. But I believe there are enough good people doing enough good things that the change is in motion. It just could do with speeding up a bit.
You have cast some of our clients.
Yes.
Almost all of them, I reckon.
I'd say the vast majority of people that come into the gym.
No, no, I'm scared you're going to ask me who I cast and which shows.
And might ask it's a quiz. It's just a quiz.
And then I'll be like, I don't fucking remember. Yeah, but I can try.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a fair few of them have sort of said that you were there early on in their careers.
No.
Including, I remember training to Joe Dempsey, who was on our podcast, and Daniel Kaluuya. I was training them at the same time, and you were training on Zoom with one of our other trainers, and I told them that you were on the Zoom call, and they went, fuck, Julie's in there. So they ran in and basically boycotted your whole Zoom.
I know, and I was fucking mortified. I was on the ground on my hands and knees doing the cat-cow stretch with my arse stuck in the air.
The peak
of glamour. Daniel was like, hi, Julie. And I was like, oh, hello, Daniel. Hello. Daniel, an agent friend of mine, Connor McGahan, had phoned me one day and said, I've seen this kid or I've met this kid and there's something about him. Mm. And he was like, and he wants me to take him on. And I was like, well, take him on. And he's like, I don't know if he can act. I said, send him in to me. Mm. So I gave Daniel some scenes to work on, and me and him sat down and we worked through the scenes, and I put him on tape, and I was like, fuck, this guy's really fucking good. And
so this isn't even casting for something. This is just Connor, Daniel's agent, ringing you up and going, can you just have 5 minutes? Or you're offering to give him.
So we worked in the scenes together, and I recorded and sent the best takes to Connor with a little note. And I think it was so long ago, it might have been on video cassette, VHS cassette. And I sent it to Connor with a wee note that was like, you got to take this guy on. He did. Mm. And then we did a show called The Fades that was written by Jack Thorne. And
which
that was
Joe
a
Dempsey
role that was not written for as a black character. Mm. Oh, there was two white boys in those two lead roles. Mm. People were like, you've got Daniel down on your list. And I was like, he's the best young kid around. Mm. And he was astonishingly brilliant in that show. Mm-hmm. The show won a BAFTA for best show.
And then got cut.
Well done, BBC.
Yeah.
but like, that's my Daniel story. You couldn't be more proud of what an amazing guy and everything he's achieved. Mm. I mean, he's a legend. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I freaking love Joe Dempsey as well. I mean, they're both doing so well, despite giving you that anecdote. I'm genuinely not somebody that ever likes to claim responsibility over someone's success, because, you know, it goes back to his mum. Mm.
Do you feel so like proud about the whole thing?
Enormously so.
Yeah.
Enormously so. And it sort of makes the whole damn sweat of the job worthwhile when you see. I mean, I cried when Daniel won his Oscar. It's like, oh my God. I mean, like, look at him go.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And it's like, it's beautiful. And you know, there's so many actors now, because I'm now so damn old, that I knew when they were 16, 17, 18, that are now huge. It's gorgeous to have been anything to do with anyone's journey. And I feel really privileged, actually.
I guess that kind of fuels you to work, really.
24/7.
And to keep, like you're saying, to kind of put the hours in and to be getting up at whatever time and speaking to America when you get home. Like it gives you a bit of fire for, like, keep the passion for the job and everything.
Super important. And to deal with the, you know, there's like a lot of like toxic kind of, I mean, I'll throw it out there. There's a bit of a bullying toxic culture in the film and TV industry. And it's very hard to kind of navigate through sometimes, hence the need to have a breakout to do a workout. And so exactly what you're saying, David, those moments do make it worthwhile.
We get a similar thing. It's like, you work on a small project with an actor, they end up doing bigger and bigger projects, and you see them and you've taught them certain things that they then take on to all of their work. Like, I never want to keep a client forever.
Yeah.
I never want to have to train them every time they do a film. That's not how we do it. That's not how we work. We want to teach people. And so to see people go on and do bigger and better things and move past sort of needing you there as a crutch for them in regards to their training or their health or whatever, and they're just living their healthy life, we feel the same kind of pride when we do that.
Yeah,
it's great. And that's what keeps us doing the crazy hours, waking up before everyone else, going to bed after everyone else.
It's helping people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to take a big pivot.
Oh my God.
I'm going to talk now about your year last year, where you were nominated for a Primetime Emmy.
I was.
Woo! Which is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
What was that like? I just want to know what it's like.
Well,
what he's asking is it similar to being asked to come on this podcast? Is that
which
the
one
same
do you rank higher?
Guys, this is honestly, I do apologize to the Emmys, but this is way more fun. No,
totally.
I mean, like, it's tricky, right? Because, I mean, I've got a little boy.
Yeah.
And I don't like leaving him.
No, yeah.
And there's this such a side to that whole red carpet glitz and glamour and celebrity world in LA that is exciting. But then you go and you're in it 5 minutes and you're like, oh, it gives a fuck.
And it's horrible.
You know, it's but the good thing about it was we were nominated for I May Destroy You. HBO were extremely generous and sent me and my older brother to LA business class and put us up in this really posh hotel, and I got to hang out with my big bro for 5 days.
Nice.
And we went trekking up on the Hollywood sign, and you know, and that was the best bit of it, to be honest. The actual ceremony, they had no booze. The face on me when I asked the guy where the bar was, and he was like, sorry, ma'am.
Why was that?
There's no bar because of COVID. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? What do you mean there's no bar? I'm here for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I'm nervous. The week later, there was the other, because there's the Craft Awards and then the Primetime Awards. And then the week later, we were at the Primetime because Michaela was nominated for Best Writer and the show was nominated for Best Show and all that kind of stuff. And there was an after party, me, Michaela, and Papa.
Friend of the show.
Friend of mine. Love the guy. We all went to
Careful,
the after.
Dave will fight you for his affection.
Oh, I mean, he's the
best. He's my mate, all right.
He's fucking great, right? And so we went to the HBO after party and met the Amazing. Weekend. Because I am such a nana, I went, hi, Weekend. And the director of the show's son, who was with the director of the show, whispered in my ear, it's the Weekend.
But would you,
it's
would the you
weekend.
Even?
Hi, seems, Weekend.
It seems the wrong thing to go, hi, the Weekend.
Yeah.
I know. Well, exactly, David. That's what I thought. But shout out to the Weekend. He is a really nice guy.
I'm sure he's listening.
I mean, he would be a fool not to be. So that was all really fun. That's just a small thing in the, you know.
And not why you do it.
No, God, no. It is what it is.
Yeah. It means a lot and kind of nothing at all at exactly the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't seen each other for ages other than on a screen because Julie's been working out on Zoom with her trusty sidekick, Ray Hendry. Shout out to Ray.
Hi, Ray.
How have you found working out at the office? Because we do talk about training and not just, we have to kind of bring it all back around again.
Well, we've been working out in the studio room, which is the room that we created to audition actors in, and then we haven't had an actor in the door since because something called COVID happened. We've got loads of space. We've got the equipment there. It works really well. But I just have to say, after coming into the gym today in person, I am fucked. Because you can't hide behind a computer screen.
We walk up
when
one
David's
flight
right
of stairs
in front of you in the flesh.
One flight of stairs to get to this room, and Julie had to take a little pit stop path.
My fucking legs are wobbling. No, it's better being in the gym in person. Yeah.
But I mean, when you couldn't do that, Zoom is a
totally. And I run a company. I've got a 7-year-old son and a needy husband. Jokes. But like, you know, it's overwhelming my day sometimes. So to be able to just come out of the room where we work in and just walk into the studio and do a workout, it's like a godsend to have that facility on hand. Otherwise, you know what London's like. It takes you an hour to travel anywhere. Mm-hmm. So
it's probably helped you be like way more consistent with exercise, hasn't it? I guess because it's just like saying, just walk across the studio and you're in the right
room. Yeah, because I need someone focused on me, telling me what to do. Otherwise, I just wouldn't do it.
Well, from what my experience is, the two of you, yourself and Ray, just sort of dance around to 90s club bangers.
Well,
if left to your own devices, that seems to be what happens.
We do.
And even though they work together every day and probably talk constantly about they still manage to like get stuck in gossipy conversations while you're trying to tell them what to do.
But we've been friends since we were 18 when we went to drama school together in Scotland. So there's just a different dynamic to the relationship. So it's like when you're in the room and you're being really serious and you're doing all your serious work shit, and then you go into the room to do the work, the other room to do the workout, and it's like, hi, friend.
It's like a healthy pub.
It's kind of like us. Yeah. It's like the three of us met 100%. At uni and have ended up starting a company and working together.
Exactly. And in that respect, it shows how relaxing exercise is. Yeah. Even when you're sweating your tits off, you're still like chilled.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're like out of the work mode.
That was something you talked about earlier, how the kind of pressure of your job, if you've got big studios like Netflix, for example, and that you're tasked with finding the right people to be in a show, and if the show's sort of penciled in to be something quite big, do you find like exercise and working on your own self to be quite a useful tool in terms of regulating that?
Oh, completely. I mean, it's the stress when you're in charge. So you're basically a HOD, you're the head of department when you're a casting director. So you're ultimately, you're in charge of all the actors. The pressure that comes from, you know, the big streamers nowadays. And a lot of the productions we do are co-pros between the UK and the US. So, like, I've gone through a whole day in the UK and then America wakes up and then the phones start going. And it's just like this cycle of intensity that just doesn't seem to end. Yeah. The grind, your mental state suffers enormously when you're constantly on call. And you're like, I'm not a fucking doctor. Why am I on call 24/7 for this job? But it's just the reality of it. And it's the way the industry's evolved. There's so much content getting made now. And so being able to step out of that and just have an hour on your own and do some, practice some self-care, which is what working out is, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is a necessity. It is. It's just an overwhelming position to be in. It's not a healthy way to exist.
I don't think a lot of the film and TV industry isn't a healthy way to exist. And then it doesn't matter if you're like the camera operator or casting director, or if you're like the star of the show. It's all just like the timings for stuff is mad. Like they start filming at whatever time in the morning, and it just seems to be the whole thing is just kind of crazy.
We get dropped in that sometimes. Like talking about being a HOD on a job. Like I've had it in the past where you kind of have to oversee, and it's your problem if the person isn't in the best shape they're supposed to be. It's not you're in charge of all of them.
Yeah, you're in charge. You're the answerable person.
Hey guys, it's embarrassing stories time. We've always got some good stories from our guests. We'd love to hear yours though. Go onto our Instagram, Before the Lights UK, drop us a DM with your most embarrassing gym story, and we'd love to read them, have a laugh with you.
Listen to the embarrassing stories.
Da da da.
I like it.
Da da da.
No?
There we go. That's that done.
We like to know your most embarrassing story related to the gym, related to exercise. It could be related to none of those things. It might be if you've injured yourself and it was a funny thing.
I mean, we didn't prompt you at all.
I think I just told you my most embarrassing one. On all fours doing the cat cow with my ass cocked in the air, and Daniel Kaluuya sticks his head in the camera to say hi to me. I mean, that's pretty mortifying.
It's a pretty good one.
I think that's it, though. Yeah.
No, that was pretty good. I'm sorry that I basically caused that embarrassing moment as well.
I know, but also it was so nice to see him and Joe.
Yeah,
in that position that I was in.
That's all I thought is how nice it would be for you to see some friendly faces.
That's the thing with exercise and being in the gym. It's almost like a disarming thing. Like, because so many different people come into our gym, whether it's on Zoom, obviously, or in person, that like you'd have like a studio head or an actor or two people that have worked on a job together. And it's like, it almost takes away any part of it being awkward or embarrassing because there is no other opportunity.
Yeah, there's
like, you're in there, you're in your shorts, you're doing a cat cow.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to go
with it. There is definitely like a lot of me, like if I've got a client in and then I've got someone in coming after that they might know, I'm always like, do you know so-and-so?
Because
they're about to walk in. So
just
if you don't
know. Just to warn
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if like you may have met them but don't really remember, this is their name, you can pretend you remember me in them kind of thing. And it's
has that ever happened? Has someone come in for
I've only ever bumped into Stephen Campbell-Murr in the gym.
Did you cast him in anything?
Two things. One I forgot, which of course, but the other one, he plays one of the lead characters in War of the Worlds.
He does,
which
yes.
is this big show that we did with Daisy Edgar-Jones from yes. Normal People and Gabriel Byrne.
And that was a co-production with France, wasn't it?
Yes.
Not the whole not
Canal
whole country.
Plus.
Yeah, with the whole Canal.
Canal Plus, and it was Urban Myths were the producers here. And then I think it goes. I think you can get it on Disney Plus now.
Is it?
It's really fucking good, actually. No, it's really good. You should watch it if you're into anything to do with aliens. Mm. It's fabulous, fabulous, nice. Fabulous.
That was another thing I was going to ask: is are there any things that you're involved with at the moment that you can tell us, like that are coming up that you think would be worth watching, or is that stuff you're not allowed to talk about?
Well, I can tell you the things that have been announced. So, I am doing a huge Netflix film that one of my really best friends, Tom Harper, is directing, starring Gal Gadot and Jamie Dornan.
Amazing.
Big action movie, which I think is going to be incredible. And we are in the middle of casting. No, we're not in the middle of casting. We've cast it. We're finishing casting. Steve Knight, who wrote Peaky Blinders, adaptation of Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, starring Olivia Colman.
Wow.
Finn Whitehead, Matt Berry.
Wow,
amazing.
Very excited about that. The whole team behind that have been an absolute joy to work with. And we just loved it. And I'm really buzzing about that. And we've got a show that's still shooting at the minute that Jay Blakeson has written and directed. And Jay did I Care a Lot with Rosamund Pike. And that's about like a heist that goes wrong. And that's got Gemma Arterton, Eddie Izzard, Kirby Hoyle-Baptiste, Niamh Algar on it. Those are the things I can tell you about because they've all been announced. And I better shut up before I do say something that I'm not allowed to talk about.
That just highlights how busy you are.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've taken time out of your day to sit here, it makes me even more grateful.
Well, it's because I'm a really nice person, David.
Yeah,
that is just it. Like helping the needy.
Just helping the needy.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to hear from all the guests in the series.
Honestly, it's a really nice insight into
the
what
other
you,
side,
what you do,
yeah.
the
something
other
that
side.
You never, yeah. you never get to hear about.
Also,
as well.
Like the
super
direct correlation between you are causing or helping cast people. You're the fixer, basically, of casting people.
I am
people.
The fixer.
Keep sending them to
other,
us. That's what he's getting.
The
at.
Other thing I would say, which is really important, which I don't think people realize, I have 5 people that work for me. It ain't just me.
No, of course.
You know, and I do often think I need to change the name of that bloody company from Julie Harkin Cast into something more group based because it's like the role of the casting director years ago was like you were in like your one woman show for all the reasons I've described during this whole podcast about like expansion and streamers and the industry getting so big and wide and varied. You need a big team of people to help you cast and do all the searching properly and they don't get any credit because it's your name on the door and I'm just like I gotta get that, gotta change that.
Yeah, that was something we thought when we set up our company. It's like there are training people facilities that are just a name,
yes,
and everyone that goes to that name only knows that name and then no one else gets any credit. So we were always like, no, the whole point is it's Before the Lights, it's us four now, it's the whole group, it's a method rather than an individual. And maybe it's the Harkin method.
The Harkin method. Holy shit. It's like the Wim Hof method, Julie Harkin method. Although no one's getting in a bloody freezing ice bath in the Julie Harkin method. I just think that the all the associates and the assistants, like my Nathan, Yvonne, Alicia, Ray, like they need to be brought forward and given more credit and become more noticeable of the face of the company, because like all the casting director companies out there now that work at the level that we're at, like they do multiple shows and there's lots of staff and it's a company. It's not just the Julie Harkin show for sure.
Also thank them for doing all the work while you're sat here talking
exactly.
Yeah, that's the best place to wrap it up.
That was really fun.
Again, thank you very, very much. And now you can go back and listen to all the other episodes.
All right. Thank you. Thanks,
Julie.
Bye. Cheers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.